All right, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Theater Cleaners. Today, we've got Kerrigan Sales.
Holy shnikes, am I happy to be here.
Yeah, we've got Gaines, Kara Gaines Sales here. She's what?
Some people call me
that.
What
do you do at 12 Midnight?
I am a graphic designer.
Wow, graphic designer. Are you the lead graphic designer here?
I mean, considering I'm the only one, I would say, yeah, probably.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I'm going to put Todd on his toes here. Todd, can you give us a brief synopsis of this film? I'm trying to flip things around on you right now.
I am loving this.
The script has been flipped.
I am loving this. We're doing a role reversal, and this is so great. Dom, let me take you to school real quick as to how you do this.
All right, let's see it. If you mess up once, I'll make it fun of you.
See, but also, here's the thing, is you're not too good at the opening part, because I don't think you even said what movie we're watching.
Oh, shoot.
So let me take it over for Dom, because he doesn't know how to do this.
I got ahead of myself because, you know, I was excited. I got.
He thought he had a leg up.
I got one past Todd, and then I didn't get it all the way. Fuck.
He didn't get it all the way. But today we're going to be talking about Tommy Boy, which apparently is a staple of Miss Kerrigan Sales' life. But anyways, the synopsis for Tommy Boy goes, party animal Tommy Callahan, a.k.a. Chris Farley, returns home after graduating college and gets a job at Callahan Auto Parts.
Shut the fuck up.
His family business. I see what you mean about the infliction.
It's hard.
The
punctuation. It's hard. It's not hard. Easy.
But anyways, when Tommy's dad dies, Tommy must hit the road with his dad's right-hand man, a smug number cruncher, David Spade, in order to save the family business. Dom, I might not have fumbled fucked my words quite as much as you did, but I feel like that's a little bit of a lesson as to how you do that.
I'm confused if you're saying that it's like that I did a worse job than you normally, or like you did a better job, or it was harder than you.
Either
expected.
Way, I'm not sure if it was an insult or not, which I'm not sure. Feel like see, that was a miss.
See, you might say miss, but I say I didn't hurt anyone's feelings while still putting emphasis to words to make it seem like I'm proving a point.
I actually took extreme offense to what you said, and I think this is probably the last episode we're going to do together. You've ruined that friendship, Todd.
At least we're ending on a banger, am I right?
Oh, yeah.
That was so insensitive. Like, hey, we're having a moment here, and you just have to butt in and say, no, well, it doesn't matter, because I'm here today.
Yeah.
Remember earlier, before the podcast, that you're saying you're like either like the scum of the earth, so that you think like the best person ever?
I don't remember that.
Oh, I vividly remember that.
I remember her saying that. You know what?
Which version are we getting today?
Because I feel like it was the one I'm the best one in the universe one.
Yeah, I feel like it's the latter, not the former.
Yeah. I think you said that wrong.
Yep.
But that's fine. It's no, okay. Actually, we'll no. I said scum of the earth first, didn't I? Yeah, you're right.
Who's to say?
So, you might be wondering why I am wearing a hard hat along with Miss Gaines here. Well, if you haven't seen the movie, then you wouldn't get it. But if you have seen the movie, then you would.
Also, if you're from Sandusky, Ohio, you definitely get it.
You probably get it.
Probably. Also, how great was Sandusky, though? Like, as a location, sorry, to just, like, jump in super fast. Like, the fact of, like, them establishing Sandusky with, like, the house right off the bat and then post the college scene and they're like coming into the town, I feel like they establish like the vibe of Sandusky very fast.
Right.
That's fair.
It's interesting considering the fact that it's not actually even in Sandusky, Ohio.
No, not at all. Like
we're not surprised about that because most movies are not actually where they're supposed
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, but I feel like it adds some character.
It does. Yeah. But I mean, Chris Farley has a lot of ties to the Midwest. So he wanted to emphasize that kind of like Midwest feeling. Yeah, dude. He actually graduated in real life. He graduated from Marquette,
wow,
which is the college in the movie.
Look at that.
And he played rugby there.
Yep. Born in Wisconsin. Cool.
Give us the full bio. I know you know.
I did write a report about him in middle school.
Can you actually just recite the whole movie so everybody at home can follow along with what's going on?
It would probably make it easier for the viewers, huh?
Yeah. So start from line one on the script, and I think you just go from there.
Holy shnikes. All right, no, I'm not doing that. I think it's going to be better for our listeners if I do not do that. So I will say he does have a lot of Midwestern ties, and it's pretty cool to see him come up in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But either way, I mean, I know for a fact that you have watched this movie tons and tons of times. Watched it a couple. Dom, you continue to surprise me with the things you watch and don't watch. So how many times have you seen this?
I've watched it like 2 times, maybe 2.5, like okay. Some parts of it.
Okay, so a little more informed than one of our past episodes, but that's okay. I still enjoy that.
Yeah, it's always fun. I will say it's always fun to watch a movie for the podcast for the first time, because then you get to see somebody who's really passionate about the movie,
mm-hmm.
and then you get to see your fresh opinions about it.
Absolutely. But I guess this question applies for all of us, having seen the movie multiple times, but going into the watch to prep for this one, did you have, like, what were your expectations? Did you think it was going to feel about the same? Do you think it was going to fall flat? Or, I mean, I know for us, it's like, usually when you go and you watch like a comedy like Tommy Boy, it's kind of just something you put on to enjoy. But for us to like go in and watch it through like the lens of having to like kind of critique it or take note of certain things, like, did that change y'all's viewing experience?
I'll let you answer.
I mean, it was kind of funny because like I've literally been watching this since I was 2. Yeah, not the most age appropriate movie, but it was weird going into this like version of it. And so because I was like, okay, like I need to like actually take note of like some key scenes, some like just like key points, I guess. And so it was cool. Like I definitely found out a lot more about the movie this time. Especially like little references that I didn't know before or was not old enough to understand in prior watch sessions.
So would you say watching a movie, going into it with an expectation of trying to be a little more, not academic about it, but a little
analytical?
More, a little more analytical about it, change your perspective on it?
I mean,
for good or bad, or just kind of indifferent?
You know, I didn't think I could like the movie more. I was wrong.
Let's go.
Wow.
Oh, that's big.
The podcast has succeeded. At least somebody
learned something.
Learned
new.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
By learn something, I mean just enjoyed it more.
Yeah.
This isn't like, really learning anything,
really,
but that's fine.
Really gains more value from knowing more.
Gains. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Wow.
The tie-ins. This is great.
We're just tying everything up like it's shoes. Sorry.
I like that, actually.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Don't apologize for that one. That was pretty good.
Right now. That was actually not bad.
That wasn't a stretch.
I usually apologize after I tell a joke because most of the time they're really dumb. Most of the time. That one actually kind of was not bad.
Maniac on the floor.
What was your guys, like, you've watched it multiple times. Was your first time watching for this or had you watched it previously?
No, I had watched it.
Yeah.
A long time ago. My dad probably watched it. Like, my dad's big into SNL shows and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, he enjoys that kind of stuff. So he probably showed me this movie when I was younger a long time ago, like maybe in like, maybe even middle school, but like probably high school or something like that. I've seen it. I don't remember the exact times, but I know I've seen it before. But I couldn't tell you how many times.
For me, this is like such a nostalgic movie because it's like, I don't watch it clearly as much as you do.
You don't? That's weird.
Yeah, I know. Right. Bizarre.
Where's your calendar? Wow.
But anyways, no, I mean, it's like super nostalgic because it's like the first time you watch it is usually like when you're fairly young and then you go back to it and you're like, oh, I remember this movie. It's so great. All of that kind of stuff. But it's also like when I first started going to film school, these are the kind of movies that I wanted to make is like because also part of what happened with Tommy Boy, at least for like the box office, was that it was hugely influenced by Billy Madison, like the Adam Sandler movie that came out that year. It had to change like its title and some of the script because of that. But like the Happy Madison movies and like the Broadway films movies are all of the literally right up the alley of like what I wanted to do when I left school is like, I just wanted to make fun, dumb, silly little movies that like maybe aren't like the most money making movies or the most like blockbuster cinematic, but just like movies that everybody loves and calls back to and ties in. And like, this is absolutely one of those movies.
It's cool. Like definitely looking at like your first watch versus like a more recent watch, because one of my most vivid like childhood memories is we were watching it, me and my dad, and the scene comes on where David Spade walks into his office that he just got. And, he's like, "Ooh, sorry to interrupt Happy Time." And when he walks out, Chris Farley flicks him off. And I was like, "Dad, what does this mean?" And he was like, "Don't do that." And I literally had to be like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old.
Oh my God.
Explains so much now. I just understand you as a person way more now after knowing you.
See, so but I feel like everybody has like that moment where they learn to fly the bird. Like I had that. My brother picked me up from like elementary school one day. Like my brother's 16 years older than me, so it was like when he was already in college. So I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna see my brother. This is crazy. And then we're driving home and I'm like, hey, what does like this mean? And he's like, oh, you're doing it wrong. You gotta put the thumb out. He didn't like stop me or anything. He was just like, oh yeah, you're doing it wrong.
You're gonna
do it. You got to do it right.
Exactly. Can I jump to something that we usually do towards the end? But it kind of goes with what we were talking about earlier with like how you watch the movie. Influence that this movie has in the industry and stuff along that. Apparently, I just read this in the notes. Kerrigan is trying to blow my point apart. She's going to blow me the Slytherines, apparently.
Slytherines.
Slytherines. Buddy, you had one too many.
I am respectfully going to blow you to smithereens here. So, in terms of, if you guys are cool with talking about that now, I know this is usually something that we talk about later when we've dissected the movie a little more, but it kind of goes along with expectations of watching it and the culture of watching it a little bit, is I was hanging out with one of my buddies who's a sales guy, and he was talking about how he'd never seen the movie. And I was kind of surprised. I was like, oh, that's like a pretty common movie. And he's talking about how in his world, there's always references to Tommy Boy in his sales industry all the time. And it has a large influence there. And he's always just like, yeah, all these guys are constantly making jokes about Tommy Boy and like saying stuff like that. And it was just, it's very influential in terms of that. And to defend myself before Kerrigan tries to tear me apart is, I don't know if this film has a lot of influence in influencing other films and or techniques in the film industry.
Respectfully, no.
Which is usually what we talk about.
See,
but
to Dom's point, I somewhat agree in the fact that it doesn't do anything influential into the way it changes cinema techniques. I will say it's influential into the impact that it had on culture and people.
That's fair. I haven't done that much research into the culture and people part, but that's kind of what I was getting at, is it still has a large cult following, even in like things that you wouldn't necessarily think about. Like Tommy Boy is kind of a movie like about a father living up to his son, or a son living up to his father's like expectations, kind of, right?
Legacy, a little bit.
Legacy, yeah. Maybe. Yeah, maybe legacy is more what the word is, but it finds its way into culture in different ways. Like, my buddy was saying, he's like, yeah, it's almost always a joke about Tommy Boy every meeting I'm in for sales or something, because it's so influential in that sense.
Yeah,
which
dude,
I think is different.
Wings.
Huh?
What?
I have no idea what you just said.
Chicken wings.
Chicken wings. He's going to talk him into chicken wings, or talk her into chicken wings. I don't understand. I don't understand how he talked her into chicken wings there. Like,
I will
how did
say,
that actually convince her?
That was a weird thing, because that was one miss, I will say, that I think Tommy Boy had. And this is
okay.
This is hard for me to admit, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
I'm all
but
ears, actually.
So right after that little scene with Helen.
She knows the name!
Oh, no.
David Spade's talking to Chris Farley, and he says, hey, like, you're not smart in a book sense at all. You suck at that. But in terms of people, you understand people. You know what they want/need to hear. And I was like, she didn't want or need to hear what he had to say about stroking and massaging his tiny sail. And so I think that he was entertaining enough or annoying enough to let it happen. But I don't think that really showed what they were saying. So
yeah,
I think
no,
it was a miss.
I got the point. Was like, when he doesn't have pressure, he can do what he needs to do. But it didn't, like you're saying, it didn't really actually,
but
it didn't show that well.
I also feel that that Street Smarts reference doesn't really necessarily tie to that exact moment, because I also feel like when they were talking about that in that scene, I was, in my mind, I was thinking back to Tommy coming back from college and taking his first lap around the factory, and everybody's like, Tommy!
That showed way more than that chicken wing scene ever did. So that was one thing that I did think was a little strange.
Yeah, I feel like with the chicken wings thing, it was just kind of like, hey, I'm going to talk to you person to person. More as like, hey, I'm like kind of struggling at my job right now. So if you could make me these chicken wings, that would be so great. That's more how that came off to me. Not necessarily like he's selling her in that.
But I can see that.
That's where David Spade kind of clicks, because it's like the first time he gets the desired outcome out of whatever BS he's slinging.
Yeah. I think that scene was supposed to show him trying to like selling the chicken wings, which I was like, kind of agree with you. It kind of falls flat a little bit. It's like, doesn't really do it for me. Like, it's like, come on.
But I do think that this did... Like, I mean, like your friend said, like, I do think it had a huge impact on sales, and like, it's very, as obviously the deer scene, that's not realistic, but in terms of like the sales perspective, it's very accurate of just like how selling goes. It's every single time he went in our office, no, we're not buying from you. I don't want to work with you. I want to work with your dad. Like things like that. It's very accurate. And so I think that,
Is that how you feel when you applied for the job here? They're like, no, we want to actually hire your dad for that position.
Well, my dad's not a very good graphic designer, so I wasn't too worried. But
that was one of those jokes I should apologize for because it sucked.
That was, yeah. That was a bad one, actually.
No, but the way the question was written, if it's important or influential, I think that, yes, to your point, it was influential in like a people perspective, and like a sales perspective, that kind of thing, because a lot of good points are made. But even more so, I do think that it really was influential in a film perspective as well, because it gets referenced in so many other films. And about 10 years after the film was made, Paramount, they tried to do a just flashback special on Tommy Boy. And Pete Siegel, he was like, respectfully, why? Like, he's the one who directed it. And he's like, why do you want to do that? And Paramount's like, well, it was one of our top 10 grossing films. He's like, oh, this year? And they were like, no, ever. So it was up there with The Godfather, Indiana Jones.
That is true. That is true.
It's up there.
Also, sorry to like side tangent. Showtime has a TV show about Godfather being sold to Paramount and the making of The Godfather. And Miles Teller is like the lead actor in it. Super good. If you ever have like background knowledge.
It's not like a doc. It's like a...
It's not a doc. It's like a... It's kind of like a biopic, but
is it like
TV show.
What's that one with Tom Hanks? The one about Disney?
Oh, Saving Mr. Banks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. Kind of. But no. Sorry. You bringing up the deer, that keys me into actually one of the like more impressive things that they did with this film on like a... Even just like a planning standpoint.
Oh, deer, what's this going to be about?
I don't know if you want to know, my guy. But no. So they had 4 Plymouth GTs for this movie, the car that's in it. And, they ended up giving one of them to the animal trainer, animal herder, whatever. And basically they take this car, they put it out in a field of like a bunch of deer, hide some bushes around it. And then they basically let the deer, you know,
do its business,
do their business all up in around the car, whatever, get comfortable around the car. So that way when it comes time to get the shot and the deer's finally comfortable with the thing, they basically like let the deer crawl up there to do its business, and then they just shock it and turn on all of the lights and start rolling cameras. And that's why the deer is like perfectly freeze framed on the back of the car, is because
that's
it was
crazy.
Actually scared. And also in the...
They went deer hunting, but with a car instead of, in a camera instead of a tree stand.
It's just crazy how long they waited for that scene. It was
5 weeks.
Yeah. It was over.
They just had a feeder and just like, we're like,
yeah,
dropping like feed.
But I think what's hilarious with it though is in the actual like canon of the movie, like when they stop the car, they're on a bridge, and then
it randomly is like in the forest.
No, it's like they do a good job of like keeping it all like black background and everything like that, like they're somewhat tilted up at it. But it's funny because the deer just like jumps off the backside of the car. And it's like, if you're following in canon, that deer would have just jumped off a bridge. Like in theory of like the movements that it should have played out in.
I keep on coming back to this point after doing this podcast with you. You should just be a script soup.
I should. Yeah.
Like you pay attention to continuity.
I love continuity, dude. Like a lot. Yeah. It's where everybody fucks up.
Everybody gets mad at me when I'm watching movies because I'm like, that's not realistic.
That soda can was at a 45 degree angle and now it's at a 32. That's not right.
Are you the person that doesn't suspend their disbelief to watch a movie? So like you're watching like John Wick and you're like, there's no way he could do this.
Okay, but John Wick.
I try and keep it to myself unless it's blatant. Unless they should not have
so
put
like
it in the movie.
You're like watching Avengers
so
and be like, they can't do that.
No.
That's not possible.
Because in that universe, they can.
Okay, fair. I will say, though, to John Wick's defense, they are realistic, at least with like the bullet counts.
No, they're actually pretty good.
They're pretty good at it.
Yeah.
In defense of them. But that's not our
so
movie.
So like in Star
week.
Wars, you're like, these stormtroopers suck. They like can't hit shit.
Dude, the Force is such bullshit.
I've only
There's
seen
no
each
way.
Star Wars like
well, actually,
one time.
It's the midichlorians in your blood that are like make you control the Force, okay? You said you only seen Star Wars like once?
I mean, I've watched
Let's move
every
on to this
single
before.
One, but once.
Star Wars is my thing, dude.
I had a vendetta against it
we
for
need,
a while.
We need to move on before I stay and talk about this for too long.
Yeah, I could talk about Star Wars all day. Which,
about how you should watch Star Wars more.
Honestly,
and how the Ahsoka
people
TV
just,
show is coming out, and I'm kind of excited for it.
Hey, if anyone out there wants us to do a full breakdown on the entire Star Wars trilogy or entire canon, I'm willing to do that.
Follow our Patreon.
We will make a full Patreon where we just strictly break down Star Wars. That will become a thing
Beer
if you guys really want.
Goes to space.
No. I'm so scared of space.
Yeah, well, Star Wars takes a lot of place in space. It takes place a lot in space. That's
are you scared of the dark?
Twister.
Yes, you are.
Wait, what did you say?
Are you scared of the dark?
Me?
Yes, you are too. No, everyone's scared of the dark. That's my little tangent. Because you're scared of
like,
what
no,
you
no.
don't know.
No, okay. that's actually
to
true
that
though,
point,
right?
To that
like,
point, that's why my biggest fears are space and the ocean, because I don't know what the fuck's there. Dark doesn't necessarily scare me, because if I don't see it, I don't believe it.
I'm so much less scared of space than the ocean, because the ocean is so much more deadly than space.
Yeah, but, dude.
Like that sounds dumb, dog. but to stabilize a craft in space is so much easier than stabilize a craft deep in the ocean.
Well,
no, but
it's so much easier to do.
I
and that
feel
sounds
like
crazy,
the immediate space is less deadly, less space that we can get to, but not like space,
Bass.
Space.
Yeah, because like think about it. You
no,
ever
no,
watch
no.
that movie, Gravity?
The thing that's really easy about space is it's nothing.
Yes, but did you watch the movie Gravity to where like? The arm of the space station when they're out on a spacewalk gets broken, and then the dude's just vastly going off into infinity. Like, you know how terrifying that would
That's
be.
That's the same as being in the middle
me
of the
if
ocean.
I said I actually watched
See,
that movie.
But I would actually be mind blown. But no, if you were to fucking get lost in the ocean, just go underwater and try and breathe. At least you're dead in like 5 minutes in space. Like,
take your spacesuit
yeah,
off.
What?
You'll be
yeah,
dead
actually,
faster.
Hang on. Yeah, you got me there. You got me there. As soon as I said it, I was like, shit, there's a quick out in either scenario.
It's much faster in the space one, I'm going to be honest.
Is it?
Yeah. It's a vacuum. Your blood boils in an instant of a second. I know that sounds awful, but you're dead before you can even feel it.
Oh.
It boils?
That wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, because there's so low pressure, all of the oxygen and molecules dissolved in your blood. Literally vaporize out of it because it's so vacuous. There's nothing there.
Hey, you know, before we started recording, when we said like tangents are kind of like our main bread and butter, I feel like we went on way too deep of one. So
okay.
Maybe we should bring it back to Tommy Boy.
So back to Tommy Boy, that has nothing to do with space
Not
or the ocean
a single thing.
At all.
Oh, actually, no, there is a way I can tie this back.
On the airplane with the
with
life
the,
preserver?
Oh. Kind of. It is on the airplane, but it has to do with mountains and lakes and if they were to crash.
Into a mountain rather than a lake.
Yeah. Tommy had said if we were going to crash, it's more likely to be into a mountain than over a lake, which actually, when you look at a map...
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. They fly over two massive lakes, like Erie and Lake Michigan, but they don't fly over a single mountain range. So that's just a little added bit of.
I also was so confused. That was one of the things I noted, like this past time I watched it, and I never noticed before. I was like,
I'm not gonna lie, that is the most lame thing you could ever pay attention to in a movie. I'm impressed that you did, but that's so fucking lame.
What do you mean? I think that's part of like what makes it such a great movie is the fact that like there is humor dripped and laid out throughout the entire movie. Like it is purely bit stacked upon bit stacked upon bit, and even if you don't catch it, there's always something funny being said.
That's
or
true.
Being
and
done.
I respect
also,
it.
Also, I feel like
it.
Because of how contrasting the two personalities are, there is comedy for every single person.
Okay. So actually, we forgot to bring this up already. How do you guys relate to a specific character or like the story as a whole?
Ooh,
do
yeah,
you
okay.
relate in any way to this movie?
Okay. That's a good question. Because I feel like I kind of relate to both David Spade's character and Chris Farley's character in different ways. I feel like I relate to Tommy in the kind of bumbling idiot sometimes. Like, I feel like I'm lost. But in less of a perpetual state, more of just like a sometimes kind of deal. And then also sometimes I kind of relate to David Spade's character. I forget his name. What's his character?
Richard.
Name? Richard. No, I actually
that's
not.
Part of the joke. He's dick.
Makes sense. Didn't even realize that. Sometimes I'm bad at remembering names of, first of all, actors, but also,
you know,
like
I,
characters.
I can't help but think that everybody's watched this a billion times. I apologize. You know, yeah. I understand.
I mean, if you've only seen every Star Wars once, which is more impressive than a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I need to stop that before you go on a tangent again.
Stop doing that.
Yeah. But, like, I also kind of relate to him, and sometimes I feel like I'm too serious sometimes. Like, I get too, like, straight-edged a little bit.
I also feel like you're very, like, you have the mellow personality. Like, you're not, like, overly, I don't know, out there. Like, Chris
Farley
is. A
little more reserved.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got the bumbling idiot part, but the reserved bumbling idiot.
See, yeah, I would say, like,
also,
if we're going like majority basis, I'd say you're more David Spade with like influences of Tommy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David Spade after he's been friends with Tommy for a while.
Yeah, you're David Spade at like the end of the movie. Wear a backwards hat every now and again. You're kind of chill.
I feel like you're the opposite. I feel like you're Tommy with influences of Richard.
Yeah.
Like,
also,
like you're
Tommy- this is too.
You're
films
Tommy
in a row to where you've just gotten me pegged as a specific character.
Yeah.
And
did
I'm
you
here
not just
it.
Do the same thing to him?
No, but last episode shut recorded, up. Which was some time in the past that was definitely
not
point in the past, present, or future.
Which was definitely not earlier today, because we would not record two episodes in the same day.
Never.
Never.
I'm a real boy.
In
ooh. What?
That one I pegged him pretty good for a character. But you're like Tommy after he's figured his shit out and started living up to the legacy.
No, okay.
Like you're like
I like
you're
that.
Like a couple
I'm
years
cool
down
that.
The line and you started getting the shit together kind of.
Okay.
But you're still like to have fun kind of vibes, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, for me, like the way I related to this movie is like in college.
Oh yeah, no, that part for you is 100%.
Yeah, like I literally had a roommate who was Chris Farley in this movie, and I was 100% David Spade, but it was like
you were David Spade in college.
David Spade that yells.
Yes, but also probably more like David Spade when the cameras stopped. Like, play the character and be responsible a lot of the time. And then once the cameras stop rolling and there's no one to keep me in check, it went off the rails. But
so you weren't actually like Richard. You were just play Richard sometimes.
Sometimes I would have to be Richard. But a lot
because
of times,
there already was a Tommy boy.
But also you put two Tommies in a room and it gets
little,
out of hand.
It's a lot.
It escalates.
Yeah.
That's what they did when they hired me. We're we are the two Tommies. But
I love it. It's great.
I very much relate to Tommy Boy.
Do you? I wouldn't have known.
Let's go! Yeah.
No, but instead of rugby, it's cheerleading.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was rugby, but in a cheerleading uniform. No,
you just
but
tackle
my,
the other like cheerleaders and like flyers. You're just like, I'm the best one. God, and just fucking hit them.
Yeah, I'm well-rounded.
Well-rounded. I like it.
No, but my dad was or is super successful. He's run multiple businesses, and everybody that I've ever known him to work with likes working with him because they like him. And that is to a T, Big Tom Callahan. And I feel like as I've been growing up, like I went through my irresponsible phase, and then finally, like, I've always been like the loud one to just try and get a laugh.
Phase?
Huh?
You finished your irresponsible phase?
I mean, are we ever fully responsible? But I've tried to get to the point where, like, I want to earn my father's respect.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not the type of person, I don't necessarily want to take over his company, but I do want to, like, continue that legacy and prove that I can be his successful, like, nature.
You want that, like, I'm proud of you, kiddo.
Yeah.
You're just aiming for that.
Yeah, and I feel like that's what Tommy was reaching for the whole movie with or without his dad there.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. I was going to say something about you and Tommy earlier, but I forget what it was, and I'm just going to try to remember it.
That's fair.
Think really hard.
Yeah.
Whenever I try to think, my brain goes blank.
Yep, that checks.
Dude. Oh, I remember what it was. It was like the when Tommy goes up to his test score and see what he got. He's like, I got a D plus.
I passed.
That effort, it's like so great because at first he like looks and he's like, I got a D plus. I'm going to pass. I'm graduating.
Did you guys see the Easter eggs in that scene?
What yes. are the Easter eggs in that scene?
On the roster of his classmates.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to text on screen that much because it's usually too fast for me to read because I'm dyslexic.
See, but you're also just apparently bad at research because this one is everywhere on Google.
Well, because I know you like to do that research. So I didn't want to come up with the same things that you were going to say.
Yeah, but it was like on the class roster of like History 201, it was Little Debbie, Helen Keller. She got an F. Shocking. And then Michael Jackson was on there. He also got a D plus. They don't like to give out those. But I mean, there's quite a few great little Easter eggs on that roster list.
Oh yeah, no. I thought honestly the best out of them to me is Helen Keller. She just getting the F.
That's tough.
See, that was before all those integrated classroom stuff. Like if you had special requirements where like existed, so it makes sense. Now if she went to school, she probably would have done better.
I don't know. I just don't think I've ever seen anybody learning Braille in school, but
okay, how do people learn Braille then?
I don't know. I mean, they probably learned it somewhere, I just haven't seen it. I think she's still getting
she might get
a D minus because we're soft these days.
She hasn't seen it either.
that was well timed. Speaking of not seeing things, what are other films you have seen that are similar?
That are similar?
That correlate well, I guess I should say.
I mean, I feel like an obvious one would be like Caddyshack, kind of. Or like Animal House. Those are like kind of similar vibes, I feel like. In terms
Happy
of like,
Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore. Like in terms of like comedy like styles.
Oh, even Happy Gilmore for like the plot line of like someone's going out to do something to achieve a goal for someone else.
Yeah, I guess.
Like save the company for the 300 employees or save grandma's house so she's not at the crazy retirement home.
Or Billy Madison trying to like prove to your dad that you were something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like I very much was like, when I was filling out the run of show, I said like, I honestly think that like at the time when Tommy Boy is made, that is like the golden era of family comedy in the sense of like, that's when Adam Sandler was absolutely popping off. That's when like Tommy Boy and Broadway Films was whipping out like Coneheads and, you know, it's not Karate Kid. What's the one where Beverly Hills Ninja or whatever it is? It's Chris Farley playing a ninja, dude. It's awesome.
It's incredible.
But like that era, there were so many different comedy movies that were all coming out. And I feel like they all have
they went hand in hand.
This was like 90s. I feel this like, was like mid 90s, right?
Like 87 to 90s. Yeah.
I feel like the biggest, like a lot of those movies that we just mentioned are all Chris Farley and Adam Sandler, and they were good friends, and that's why like so many of those like similarities exist, like 50 First Dates.
Oh yeah.
That one, they drop a little Easter egg there too.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and it's in the movie they talk about, or like you see it's Callahan something.
Oh,
they use the name Callahan or whatever?
Huh?
Use the name Callahan.
Yeah, it's like Callahan something. It's not Callahan Auto Parts. It's like Callahan Industries or something.
Yeah, it's like Callahan Industries, but it still says it's...
It's funded. It says it's funded in Sandusky, Ohio by T.B. Callahan. So, Tommy Boy.
Tommy Boy.
But yeah, no, it's pretty cool to see how just like those, just from them working together so often, it showed up in other films.
So, well, what's double cool though is the fact of like...
It's double cool?
It's double cool.
Holy shit.
Because... So many of the SNL people from that time were such great friends. And like, that's part of what makes it great is
that guy in a little coat.
That only came around because Farley and Spade were friends. And actually, I feel like there's another piece of the movie that came from that.
I feel like a lot of parts of the movie came from stuff like that.
100%. I was kind of teeing that one up for like a later combo. But anyways, no. Like, Fat Guy in a Little Coat was, they were just doing, you know, normal takes of it.
I love his oops when he rips it.
Also, yes. The reason that they even did that in the first place is Chris Farley went up to David Spade's desk, like, every day at SNL did the same bit. And he's like, David Spade would be turned around. He's like, I'm not turning around if you're doing the Fat Guy in a Little Coat bit. And he would turn around. He's like, no, it's something different. It's something different. He'd turn around and he'd go back. But it was never a
song. It wasn't a song. So yes, they shared an office at SNL for like their first couple of years when they were on the cast. And every single time they would have like downtime to be writing their jokes. And that's where that came from, is every single time Chris Farley would turn around and be like, hey, I want to test my new bit. And it was always Fat Guy in a Little Coat. And so when they were filming this, after numerous takes, they just weren't getting it right. And in one of the outtakes was when they were singing it, because they were just kind of like, it's like a side.
Yeah,
piece.
He was like off camera.
He was off camera.
And they were like, we got to re-record that.
Yeah. And so basically that's where it stems from, is like, he was just kind of being himself, like bored on set. And he was just like,
that guy in a little coat.
And it just became such an absolute classic. Because the one I was teeing up is housekeeping.
Yep. Housekeeping. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. Like, not only between David Spade and Chris Farley's like off screen, like humans, so many real life events were tied into the movie. Mm-hmm. Because Siegel and Wolf, who helped write the actual movie itself, the car scenes, like the oil can and the door
at the gas station.
Yeah, the door at the gas station. Those were both from them, just like real life scenarios. And when they were writing those.
So you mean like somebody actually backed up?
Yeah exactly.
So they were coming up with like premises for other bits, and they were trying to draw inspiration from like real life. And a lot of the ones are stuff that they actually did.
Yeah. And like,
so
I remember.
So one of them actually backed the car door.
One of the things that they did, or supposedly did, was they were like, okay, like this, what we wrote so far is really short. Like there's not much to this. We're going to need some substance. And so they wrote out a bunch of real life, like scenarios that were like funny in their own lives. They had flashcards all over the floor, and they were like, how do we connect this, like all these dots, and make a movie? So I thought that was really cool.
Well, I also read that like, what is it? Wolf was one of the writers for SNL who they tapped in to help with this one. But what I had read is the fact that, like, basically they would be up until 4 a.m. On a day before shooting, writing the script for that shoot day. So it was very much of like I saw somewhere in your notes, Dom, that you were like, oh, this movie doesn't do anything like super technical camera wise, which is valid because it really doesn't, but also because of the way that they were doing the production on this, because they were, it was during an SNL season. They didn't wait for the hiatus. So it was like so many of the cast members are flying to and from New York and Toronto to do this movie. And so while they're doing that, like all of the script is being written at the same time as them shooting it. So there's really no chance to plan.
I feel like that's why the script itself is so good, because I feel like Tommy Boy was like, SNL had to be very, very scripted, and like, obviously they improv a lot, but like there was an agenda.
Yeah.
And Tommy Boy, I felt like, was kind of more of their release from like the chaos of going back and forth between Toronto and shooting for SNL.
I was going to say, it kind of feels like an SNL skit though.
It like the way, so this is like where I think this differs as a comedy, is because it's like, it does have a story. It does have like a driving plot, but the way that it stacks bit on bit, like it goes, it'll literally be doing one bit and then just immediately next scene is another bit, but still tied into the same thing. Whereas I usually feel like some of these comedies are like bit, chunk of story, bit, chunk of story, and sprinkle in the humor here and there. Whereas like Tommy Boy very much feels like, hey, we want to do as many bits as possible, but we got to tie them to something.
I feel like that is one thing that I really respected about this movie, is like SNL obviously is a different breed. It's not a movie. So they're just trying to make you laugh. But I don't like when a scene goes on too long, and SNL is very much like, we got to keep this going and like keep people laughing until we get to the next thing. I liked that Tommy Boy was very intentional about where they cut, because yeah. Like, for instance, when they're going over the like business knowledge, when they're in the car and they're going back and forth, and he's like, if the average, he's like trying to give them like scenarios. He's like, if the average human uses 10% of their brain, you use 1.5%. I knew that.
Yeah.
Like, and as soon as he said that, they showed it, Chris Farley's expression, they immediately cut away to the next scene. And like, they didn't give him a chance to reply, which I thought made it so much funnier.
One of the things that I noticed that I absolutely loved, and it does have to do with like the way that they cut and the way that they edited the film, is right before they go out, they're already on the road trying to do their sales thing, but it's right before the montage of all the first sales meetings. And it's like, they get out of the car, Chris Farley turns to David Spade and he's like, does the suit make me look fat? And David Spade's like, no, your face does. The fucking great writing, such a good moment. And like, honestly, some of the movie was improv, but like most of it actually was the script they were writing that they actually stated.
Yeah, I did actually see that one in particular that I'm pretty sure was Siegel overhearing that happen in real life.
Yes. So the story behind that is that Chris Farley was going in for wardrobe tests, and he walks out of the changing room and he's like, hey, does this suit make me like, you know, look fat? And literally verbatim, David Spade is like, no, your face does. And it was like, that's got to
write that down, write that down.
That's got to be in it. But what I was going to say is the fact of like, they deliver that line, they go over some of like the salesy beats or whatever, but then it goes straight into the sales montage. And I feel like they cut through with like just the right pacing to where it was like, they establish the first sales meeting and then it's cut to just every time someone says no and a reaction. No reaction, no reaction.
Can we talk about subplots in this movie? Half of them make no sense.
Elaborate.
Why is there a whole part where he has a stepbrother and a stepmom?
Oh my gosh. I think this one is so well tied together.
That is very big.
It's very okay. big.
That is very big.
One of, obviously David Spade didn't have a lot of friends, and he was stoked at the end of the movie when Tommy became his friend.
Sure.
The whole time, when Tommy found out he was getting a stepbrother, he was over the moon. Obviously, that didn't pan out very well. But I thought one of the coolest things that really tied that up was at the end of the movie, he still ended up with a brother. It just wasn't the one he expected.
Sure.
Okay, that's a great way to put it. That really puts a bow on things for me. But no, the reason why I was saying it was big, it was originally written to be where David Spade wasn't like the main character. It was originally written to where it was like Tommy and his stepbrother were like the driving factors of it. And that's also why Rob Lowe was uncredited, is because he wanted to be a happy surprise to people because once they changed the script to have it be Tommy and David Spade, he was just like, oh, I can still play this character. I'll just, you know, be happy to be a part of it.
Okay. I heard that he also had some contract things going on with like an ABC show or something, but I don't know if that's actually true.
No, so it was about to be a scheduling conflict, and they actually had someone like really famous queued up to be the next person. I can't remember who it is, but it's like it was shocking, and it would have fully changed the way it went. But this is something I really did want to bring up, is early career Rob Lowe is one of my favorite actors. And still to this day, Rob Lowe is one of my favorite actors. And he very much bought into the fact of like, I'm a good looking human. I can just play a role and just be kind of like honest with it. But like young Rob Lowe, dude, I don't know if any of y'all have ever seen the movie Youngblood, which I guarantee you probably haven't because it's a hockey movie. And even then, as a hockey kid, I didn't see it until like further into adulthood. But it's Rob Lowe playing a hockey character. And he's like very much just like, oh, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be after it. Get after it, all that. It's also great. Keanu Reeves plays the goalie before he even like pursued an acting career. It's awesome. But no, like young Rob Lowe is very much of just like, I'm just happy to be in the industry. And now it's like, even in this current day and age, he's very happy to be a part of the industry. He's just one of those guys.
It's very cool because he could just kind of float on his looks and still be in like good movies and stuff.
He's still a good actor.
He was a really great supporting role.
Yeah, and for like his character being so accident prone, he was willing to do a lot of the stunts himself.
The cow tipping was his idea.
Yeah, like I think that's hilarious. It's like, I feel like a lot of the times with like Hollywood or like big name actors or whatever, everybody creates their own perception of who they are, who they act like because of some of the characters that they play. Like we were saying with Will Arnett in a past episode.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some people just get typecast and then you start to believe like the actor is the same as the characters they play. And that's so not the case so many of the times. And like Rob Lowe is a perfect example of that, of like him just saying like, yeah, you don't have to credit me. I just want to be a happy surprise. Like that's something that's so cool. And it's like, you don't hear about it all the time in Hollywood.
Sure. I don't know. I just feel like the subplot's kind of a random. Like, I get what you're saying. It kind of ties back all together, and that seems, like, really profound for this movie, right? That seems like a resolution to this film that's, like, kind of surprisingly deep for
I
this movie. You know what I mean?
That it's ties like, wow. back to who Chris Farley is as an actor, though.
As a person. And like that,
because like, he, yeah, obviously he's the dim-witted, like, goofy, happy-go-lucky actor, and he can play that goofy part, but the parts that I thought were the most interesting from his like acting perspective was when he was playing that deeper role and he was grieving the loss of his dad. He did it really well.
Absolutely. And I actually wrote that down in like our note page or whatever. It was like, I always think of Chris Farley as like a physical comedy or a self-deprecating humor kind of guy. But in like the grand scheme of things, he's a really, really good actor. He was. And like, it especially shows for me the scene that really stands out and really shows that is the first time they go out on the boat and he's with his what's her name? I can't remember, significant other that he's trying to date or whoever.
Oh my god.
Oh, she
can't
know.
Remember.
She Holy doesn't shit. Know.
She can't remember.
She don't remember. Anyways, well, but no, they're out on the boat for the first time and it's like
that character'd kick your ass for not remembering her name.
Yeah. Either way. They're out on the boat and, you know, Chris Farley is mourning the loss of his father and like they're having that conversation and you can see like the way that the girl is kind of leading the conversation because, you know, he's lost in thought basically. And it's like every time they show like kind of like that medium close up of him, you can see like how good of an actor he is because you can see like slight tears in his eyes and it's like the micro expressions that he's giving. And that's like, that's some of the finer details when it comes to acting. And it's like, that gives away, like, yeah, he can play the big bumbling idiot kind of role, but like, he's so much more than that. And that scene really gives it away, but also it's a perfect transition into like, we're going to give a beat to mourn the loss of the father, but here's a quick comedy break to transition into the rest of the story when all of the kids on the beach start heckling. Like, it's like, Chris standing up and being like, shut up, you know, all of that. And then as soon as the girl stands up, it's like, perfect moment. Boom. The weight of the scene has been lifted, and now we can carry on with the rest of the story. Like, genuinely, to a T, that's great storytelling.
Do you feel like the romance part of the film was, like, random a little bit? Like, I feel like it was purely a plot device for...
I definitely could see that, for finding out
that it was all, like, a scam.
But I do think that it... I think her and him being remotely interested in each other drives the fact that she felt this need to tell him, because, I mean, like, obviously they were friends and whatever, but, like, her vested interest, I feel like, is what got them to the resolution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Chris Farley actually did all of his own stunts throughout this movie, and he fully insisted on it.
Which was so incredible because of how much he gets hurt in this movie. It's like,
did he get injured? Like, the actor got injured? Like, Chris Farley himself got injured? Or you're saying, like, Tommy Boy gets injured?
Okay. Tommy Boy, but it's hard to believe that his actual being is not hurt.
Yeah. Okay. Picture this. The scene we're just talking about, and he falls flat on the table. I know you don't watch scenes super closely, so let me break it down for you. When he falls, the corner of his face, like his cheekbone, is what gets caught and hits the corner far edge of the table when he falls down. And you can see when he fully, like, the table collapses, breaks in, you can see him, like, double hit his cheek.
I would love to know how many times they shot that one specifically.
It had to have been a one and done. Like, there's no way he would have gotten up for another take.
Yeah.
You don't think so? Fuck.
That would have been painful.
I mean, it's a breakaway table.
Yeah, but...
Okay.
It's probably got padding under it.
So I know people we can call to get one of those made. I'm sure there's people we know in our circle that would happily make one of those for us. And I can let you do a full face plant into it.
The wood is not made out of foam.
I'll do it.
You'll do it?
It's made out of breakaway wood.
Yeah. Which also isn't soft. I feel like if there's one, this is random, but one scene that totally encapsulates what I see Tommy Boy, the movie, as, it's when he walks up to Lewis and he's like, hey, Lewis, hey, Tommy. And that's the whole, that's how Tommy Boy is. That's the whole movie.
I agree.
I think one of my favorite jokes in the entire movie is when, I'm not going to act like I'm trying to remember secondary, like, background characters, but the dude grinding the what is it called? Oil filter?
Oh my God.
And he's grinding the oil filter. He's like, hey, you mind if I try one? He's like, take a shot at it, Tommy. He's grinding it.
Oh,
boom, 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 boom.
That's Lewis.
Smashes the window. He's like, nice distance.
That is such a good moment.
There's a cut scene from that where he's like, hey, if this is brought up, can we just say that? Like, trying to, like, pass it off. It's a cute scene. But Lewis and his relationship, I think, is super cute. It's like,
who's Lewis?
Lewis?
That's the one who was.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I didn't know his name was Lewis.
I didn't know they gave him a name.
The only reason I know is because one of my favorite scenes is when he goes up to Lewis and he's like, hey, Lewis, hey, Tommy.
I was talking about the same scene, just didn't realize I was. Got it. So,
dude, that's wild.
The ridiculous part is that you know every, like, background character's name. Like, you could probably recite all of the, like, oh, hey, who's the guy that has the hat back on, has the hat on backwards next to the machine? The first one that they talk to when they walk in the warehouse. Do you know what his name is?
No.
Wow. I'm disappointed. It almost looked like you were
good. I think I ruined your whole point.
Wow.
All right. Let's tie it back to some of the, like, actual details of the movie, because I feel like we've been talking a lot about, like, the premise and just the vibe, and I've enjoyed every last
minute. Do you think people actually want to know, like, serious things about the movie? What?
I don't know, dude. I'm just trying to stay on
brand. I'm kidding, Todd. Of course they do.
Do you know what it was shot on?
What it was shot on? A camera.
The camera.
A camera.
It was a 35 millimeter, right?
I have no idea. I didn't do that research.
I did that research. I would assume so.
35 is very common.
I would say, yeah, it's probably like a 35 Panasonic.
I don't know. It was shot on film, though, wasn't it?
It definitely was. It's super grainy.
I like that.
That might not necessarily. Low light. That might not necessarily be. This is just a lot of information from not camera people talking about camera stuff. I mean, it was early 90s, so. Or actually, it was mid-90s. It was 95, right?
No, I thought it was like
It was 95.
It was 95, yeah, that's what I thought. So that's starting to be introduced digital. Digital's starting to come in.
Blu-ray came out in 95.
Yeah, but yeah. Blu-ray, but at Blu-ray the same time.
But LaserDisc was
like
out in
sure.
2003 or something.
But so that started, that was kind of towards the beginning of like real digital like development in film, because they still shot film movies. I mean, they still do, but they didn't really start doing digital until like
2000,
around 2000s kind of. Like it was not popular. They were still shooting on film because that was industry standard. And that's
what it was also more accessible.
That's just what was common.
That's kind of what's weird is like emerging technologies in the industry. It takes a while for them to catch on, but once they do catch on, it's like what takes over usually.
I think that's why it just becomes they made standards. Most of their bank off of home video was because that was that little era right there, like early 90s, is when home video took off. And like that's it was like kind of at its peak is it was like, hey, the box office, you're going to make a lot of money. But Tommy Boy didn't. Quite frankly, they didn't make shit at the box office.
Okay, so this is actually a very fun question I want to ask. Is so none of us were alive to have seen this movie in theaters when it came out.
So sad.
So sad. Such a tragic moment. But I wanted to ask, in what format did you watch it first? Was it VHS? Was it CD? Or was it a streaming platform?
This movie?
Yes.
I have no idea. I really couldn't tell you. I saw it so long ago, I don't remember. It could have been on like TiVo. Remember TiVo?
When you TiVo was like,
that was
honestly,
like
it was
new
like
generation.
A 3-year ordeal, but it was like so
it was big.
It
when
was
you could massive. Record it was when Netflix. You when you could record live TV like TiVo, it might have been on that. Could have been just on a movie channel on TV, or it could have been a VHS or even a DVD. I have no idea.
See, for me, it was VHS.
There was so much overlapping technology at that time.
I
that
think it was, crazy. Yeah, that is true.
Like, VHS was still a big thing.
Yeah.
DVDs were the new rage, but also
TV
you could
was still.
But you could also watch things recorded on TV, so there's, like, so much technology overlap.
That is so crazy.
Of
that
different,
is
like, storage mediums.
That's why I wanted to ask, which format did you watch it originally? But one of the things I wanted to, like, this is, like, something that's crazy. It's, like, did y'all's families go on, like, road trips when you were a kid?
Yeah, sometimes. Not like long ones, like
yeah.
The longest one we would do would be going down to LA, which is like 7 hours. Would like we'd go to Disneyland or something
I don't
like
know.
That.
Okay. I feel like we weren't big drivers. My parents are like, if we're going somewhere, let's hop in the plane.
Yeah, like we would go
that is
we would
a
go
very Callahan family vibe.
We'd go visit family like on the East Coast, but we lived on the West Coast. So you're not gonna drive.
Fair.
The whole way.
I mean,
yeah,
every summer
my
growing
parents
up,
would be like, I can't sit in a car that long with you.
Oh, see.
I think that'd be like 9 hours was the cutoff, and that was usually like if we were already on the East Coast and we were driving somewhere from like Cape Cod to like wherever, like I think we went to Williamsburg one time.
Oh, I've been to Williamsburg.
Yeah, isn't that like the
colonial town?
The colonial town? Yeah, I think
yeah,
we went to
I did not enjoy staying.
Oh,
there.
I loved that shit. I thought it was so cool. I'm a history nerd, but you could probably tell that.
I like history, but I also like, you know, staying in a hotel that's like comfortable and not dated by 20 years.
I mean, like half the hotels that exist are dated by 20 years. 20 years ago was 2003.
I know how time works.
That's crazy,
right?
We're like, that's crazy.
Todd's like, I know. And we're just like, damn.
Dude, so, I mean, it's been, 2003, we were five.
It's bonkers that this came out before any of us were born. That's bonkers.
It is.
But that, I think that goes to, like, the point of, like, a good movie is going to stay relevant as long as
it goes to the point of it's pretty fucking influential, if you ask me. Don't start.
I like how you said you're gonna, like,
I decided to tone it down.
What was the specific language you used? You were going
to... I'm going to absolutely destroy you.
No, I don't think that
smithereens.
Was it. Smithereens. You're going to blow me to smithereens.
I took pity on you.
That didn't happen.
I feel
like you said you took pity on me,
no,
but you
we,
actually...
Our
you
conversation evolved.
I feel like you understood my point.
I did. You're wrong, but I understood it.
Who went to film school? Did you actually?
No.
I took film classes. I was about to say, fuck. I just pulled out a card that I had that is not valid.
to that point, though, we also found out that you and I going to film school is also...
doesn't mean shit.
Yeah. We were children of the COVID pandemic.
I only had half of my entire last... okay. I phrased that in a weird way. The half of my senior year was interrupted by COVID, but that was it.
See, I had a year and a half taken away from me, big dog.
Damn. So he's that COVID generation that doesn't actually know what they're doing. If he was an engineer, bridges would be falling, is what you're saying.
Oh, dude. Even if I wasn't an engineer, I can't build like a Lego bridge for shit.
I mean, you put up the Ultra Bounce today. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, but that's not a a bridge. It's a joke. It's not a feat of engineering.
It's a feat of
tenacity.
I know how not.
Tenacity the right word? I don't know.
No, yeah. I think if anything, all that proves is I know what Ready Tighty and Lefty Loosey is.
I actually kind of want to ask you guys a question about the movie. Oh, weird, right?
Crazy.
Surprising. What is your favorite sequence or for non-film people? What's your favorite part of the movie? That was mean.
Rude.
that was a dagger, dude. That was a dagger.
It was a joke.
It's just jokes, folks.
I swear, I'm not prejudiced towards non-film people. But if you don't watch Tarantino, I'm going to say bad things about you.
Good callback. That's a great callback, dude.
No, what's your favorite part of the movie? Favorite beat? Any bits that you really like?
What's
the thing that makes it for you?
Oh, so we truly are the guests on Kerrigan's episode. There's so many different bits and so many different scenes that are like super great, so influential, or so like easy to draw aspects to. One of my favorites might be because I'm a dude bro or whatever, but it's obviously like the skinny dipper scene. Not for the actual act of the skinny dipping, but for the way that Farley comes into the room after the fact. Wow. But no, it's for the way like Farley comes into the room after the fact and he's just ribbing David Spade with the little elbow jabs.
Let's be honest, you've done that to one of your friends at some point. Like,
absolutely.
You see a friend checking out a chick and you're just like, I'm gonna fucking get his ass for that.
Absolutely. Oh, and yeah. it's so great. But I think the way that the scene ends with like the lights off, they're laying in bed going to sleep, and you just hear Chris Farley whisper, "Sinner."
Yeah. Phenomenal. That is another thing I didn't notice until this time.
Right? It's such a...
How'd you not notice that? God.
Because I was focused on sphincter vision. I was like, Dad, what does that mean?
Fair. Yeah, especially for you saying how young you were when you first watched this movie, I feel like your dad was probably sitting there like, oh, God.
Yeah,
I don't want to deal with this, actually. This is more than I'm qualified for.
And you know what? Your dad regrets it now. That is who you are now. Like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. That was too mean.
No, but
only mildly regrets it.
I think that one of my personal favorite parts was right after the chicken wings and whatever, and he goes and he makes his first sale, and he's, like, shocked with himself. I mean, he's like, there's money missing out the drawer. Your daughter's knocked up. And that really was when he like was striding in his character, and I think that played such an impactful part on him realizing like he didn't need to use his dad's tactics to really like excel. But what brought it home for me was when they were doing the TV scene with Zelensky. And he finally got his dad's little catchphrase right.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was so heartwarming because...
If you want to take a good look at a... What is it? If you want to take a good look at a
T-bone. If you want to get a good look at a T-bone,
you can put your head up a bull's ass, but I'd rather take the butcher's word for it.
No, but it's got to be your bull.
See, I'm not quite like Tommy.
Damn.
But...
Yeah.
I think this movie does like a... I'll get to you, Dom. Don't worry. But no, I think this movie does a really good job with the callbacks. And like you were saying, right after the chicken wing scene and he's making his first sale, I think that was like a awesome moment for the way he's dealing with the guarantee on the box kind of guy. But in reference to the callbacks, I think it's once Tommy actually gets on TV and they're going through that whole TV scene and he has a bomb on his chest and it cuts to the guarantee guy with his wife watching TV and his wife's like, oh, do you see this crazy thing going on the news? And the guy just sits up and he's like,
oh yeah,
I buy brake pads off that guy. I thought we were watching cartoons.
I thought that was the greatest callback because it literally went to each person that was like affected by this movie or by Chris Farley's character and was like, oh, like this is what all the workers are doing. This is what, like, just like the random bar scene where like, do you want this or gladiators?
Gladiators. But that's, it's like, it's also such a, like, I don't know if you guys.
It made it so realistic.
It's so realistic.
Because nobody gives a shit. Right.
But also, that's what's really cool with the movie for like a longevity standpoint is the fact of like, at that time, Gladiators was the number one TV show. It was absolutely trending. And if you watch like the Gladiators documentary on ESPN or whatever, it really goes into detail about that. But it's like one of those cool longevity moments of like, at that time when they're filming it, it just feels like the natural thing to do. But with the longevity, it's also the smartest thing they could have done because it's the number one trending show. It's pop culturally relevant, and it just adds to what makes it great.
It's it like, adds to the nostalgia, too.
100%. It's just, like, interesting because, like, sometimes when you're making a movie, you do or you make certain decisions just to, like, get it done and make it happen at that time, and you just pick certain things that happen. But it's like, what are the odds that the random thing that you pick ends up being such a pop culturally relevant?
I do feel like a lot of it was just like random things that were like, yeah, that made sense at the time. But so much of this movie was so intentional, subliminal, like, oh, this didn't really matter type scenes. All of a sudden were tied back. And I was like, that is a loose end I didn't know I needed tied up.
Give me your best example of one.
I mean, the sailboat scene. I mean, I know we've gone back to that a couple times, but truly, like, that tied up multiple things. It's the love story, like you said, it's not super prevalent. It doesn't really matter. But at the same time, it ties up the, like, oh, like, I'm going to see her. This is, like, that type of thing was tied up. But throughout the base of the movie, he didn't really deal with his dad, like the grief of the loss of his dad. Mm-hmm. He was mainly just trying to figure out his own, like, what do I do now? And that tied that up for me because I was like, him and his dad were so close. How can he not be like grieving this loss? Like, that's very important. So yeah. I thought that was cool to bring it back, and it was sentimental. It showed Tommy Boy in his like raw state.
Where do you think this film excelled and fell flat?
To answer your question, where it excels and where it falls flat, I think it 100% excels in its comedy. It's, you know, SNL cast members, Lorne Michaels production. You can't really get too far off kilter with that. But I think some of the areas that it falls flat in is just, like, obviously, like, continuity, because they're writing it as they're making it. That just adds to the fact that things are going to fall through the cracks. But like, besides that, I don't really have like a specific answer for like where it falls flat, because I would say a lot of the comedy movies that we watch or, you know, talk about or whatever, they all have similar thematic elements. They all do kind of similar things, but always like there's not a thing I would really change about the movie. Like, I mean, there's obviously things that can be done better or whatever, more realistic or any of those kind of different capacities. But it's like, for the film, for the story, for the movie itself, where is there a moment that you can physically say, I would change this and it would still have the same outcome? Because I don't think there is one.
I would
chicken
say...
Wing
thing. What?
Chicken wing scene.
Yeah, we talked about that a little earlier, is the chicken wing. The chicken wing part felt like it...
You could have changed it. It could have had the same storyline.
It could have been better.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Most of this film, like, I don't think I would have been like, oh, hey, that could have been better. This scene, that scene specifically, I was like, yeah, it just kind of felt like... I understand what they were trying to do. It just didn't feel right. Didn't land. But I will say, in general, I feel like the whole film is a bit disjointed. It doesn't feel super continuous almost. It feels like not the tempo's off, but kind of like the, it just doesn't feel like it's a really
unified
meshed together well story. And I think we kind of,
I think
you
that
touched
has
on
a
it.
Huge, the like biggest part of that is the fact that they were shooting SNL at the same time, because none of that is cohesive at all.
Exactly.
So they're in that realm. They don't get away from that mindset.
I think it's I think it was a little bit of them writing the script as they're shooting it.
True.
Is that it's a bit disjointed because of that. They didn't quite have like a full plan all the way through. They obviously had like the outline of what was going to happen, but everything kind of getting stitched together after the fact kind of feels a little not like wrong, just not fully together, I think is really as far as I can say it. It's fine. It doesn't take you out of it. It's just kind of like, why is this storyline kind of here? Why is this happen? They go on like two different montages of like selling and it kind of feels really disjointed. I don't know. It's just that's kind of the part where I say it falls flat, but it makes up for it many times over with how funny it is and how the characters feel in the world together, like how they, like how David Spade, how Richard and Tommy Boy kind of interact with each other. That really carries it, and that like puts a blanket over all of like the disjointed feeling of the film, because you're like, this is so funny. They're like got great chemistry, like working together on this thing. It's just, you know.
Yeah. No. I had a point. I lost it almost like halfway through your convo.
Think really hard about it.
Close your eyes.
Actually, really don't think about it at all, and then it'll come back to you.
That's honestly usually how it goes.
I feel like I totally agree on it. It is a little bit disjointed, but I think that's why I enjoy it so much, is because I don't have to think about it. They totally wrap up the loose ends. Like, all of the storylines, I think, are complete. However, I don't need to follow one scene to the next. And, like, if I miss something, it's not going to be a huge deal. Like, one of my favorite parts in the movie is when they get in a fight outside of the restaurant before they go in to see Helen. And, like, he literally smashes him with a 2x4. And it's so random. Where did he get the 2x4?
Okay, but David Spade's punches, though, those,
yeah,
those were some hooks. He really came at it.
But it's like, bottom line, I didn't need to see that scene for anything else to make sense. But if they cut that out, like, now knowing that scene, I would be sad about it, because I thought it was a great scene. So it is disjointed, but I think all of those little moments are what makes it what it is.
Okay. So I remembered what I was going to say, and it very much plays into like the disjointed nature. Is a lot of times in past episodes that we've done, I've said like I've had to piece together the story through like corkboard and string. I don't think I have to piece together the story in that sense for this film, but I feel like that's how this film was pieced together, in the sense of like, they're writing it as they're shooting it, but then once it gets to post, they have a ton of scenes, and not all of the scenes roll into the next. So it's like not very natural in the way that they're having to edit. So I feel like it's very much like a corkboard and string of like, okay, how do we roll this scene into this scene with this scene going to this scene? Because you know they had to have shot it outside of order, you know, out of order to get it done or whatever.
No, on the outside.
Especially with how many people shot it in a few days. Like, Zelensky was only in a couple of days.
2 days.
And then Bo Derek Beverly, she didn't, it wasn't like she only shot it in a couple of days, but she only had 13 lines in the whole movie.
Right.
And so, like, she wasn't, like, as prevalent as she was, she didn't have a lot of dialogue. So, I don't know. I think that's, like, that plays into it as well.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I would put this film like way up there on my list of like nostalgic comedies.
Are we ranking this now?
I think we might be.
Okay. So this is the part of the episode where we rank the movies. And usually we have the, I don't know why I got like real like.
You got real quiet.
I got like kind of intimate with it for some reason.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, this is the part.
So this movie really means a lot to me, and I'm really interested in ranking this movie. No, so, Ms. Gaines, we usually have the guest rank the movie, and they choose how they want to rank it.
So
most of the time, people are boring and they rank it out of like a 10. Like, oh, I thought this was like a 9.5. When this is, then that's kind of lame. This is open. You can letter grade it. You can give it a score of 1 to 7. You can give it a score of Rotten Tomatoes. Who cares? You choose the criteria and you choose. You could also order it in like, oh, this is my top 5 certain types of movies. We let it be like kind of open, general. You get to choose how you rate it. We rate it. And then that's going to be like your rating. And if anybody disagrees with you.
Yeah. I would like to rank this in terms, because I think this is very niche in terms of what the movie is. I think it's influenced a lot of movies, but I don't think it itself is, like, you can't compare this to a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. So in terms of how it ranks against other comedy movies, I would say let's pick a period. And obviously there's some periods that are...
Fourth period.
Nope.
Dude, this is...
Sorry, that was my favorite.
Back to the jokes you got to apologize for.
That was my favorite period in high school. It was right before lunch. Fourth period.
I think because so many of these movies go hand in hand, like we were talking about before, how do you rank this period of movie up against the others? And let's give her a letter grade.
A letter grade. I like it.
Letter grade.
That's new. I think that might be our first letter grade of the season.
So, period. Are you saying like...
You're saying like 90s like comedies?
We'll say early 90s. I know this was...
It's mid-90s.
It's mid-90s. All right. Early 90s.
Okay.
Mid-90s.
So what's your grade?
That's a tough one.
Comparing
like, I feel
it,
like the pool is diluted.
Comparing it not to every other movie or every other comedy, to specifically mid-90s movies, like, and how they're kind of seen. What's your grade on it is what you're saying.
Exactly. I think this is underrated in terms of how, like, we were talking about the callbacks and, like, different references. Like, I just talked about Bo Derek. Whenever she climbs out of the pool and Tommy's like, oh, she's a 10. Well, she was in that movie 10. She was like the main character in it. And so I don't know if that was a distinct reference, but it was little things like that that I think all in all elevated the video, the movie as a whole. So I'm like, that's what's important to me. So I'm going to give her an A as much as I want to give her an A plus.
Just an A. Surprised. Just seeing that movie endless times, you only gave it an A.
I'd say easy A.
It's fair.
Not to reference another movie title. But no, I think it's easy to give it an A. Like I said earlier in this discussion, I feel like it's from the golden era of like family comedy.
I think the nostalgia definitely elevates it because it's not a quality film in terms of how it was shot at all.
Right. But I think in that golden era of like family comedy movies, like I'm talking about, like that era, there's so many different movies that came out that like you will put up there on your list of like I swear, if we put out a poll to every single person that's out there listening to this and we were like, what's your favorite movie from this era, I feel like we're going to get a mass difference in like what movies people resonate with. And so like ultimately, I feel like the pool dilutes how you're going to grade it. But even then, I feel like for a lot of the films in that era, you can give it a solid A, especially with how it compares to the era before and the era after.
Would you say the era before is like Family Vacation? Like that?
Like National Lampoon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the era before?
Probably.
So you give it an A?
I'd give it an A.
You got two A's?
Easily.
Two A's.
Two A's.
Go ahead, disappoint me.
Yeah.
You're with a B plus.
Oh,
B plus.
I feel like you. I feel like you guys are both being generous, and that's okay.
Oh,
sounds so offended.
Yeah, very much stood by the A. That wasn't like throwing it out there. That was just like I'd rank it up there.
I'm gonna go with a B plus because I don't have the same kind of nostalgia as you guys. You guys seem to have a lot of nostalgia for the movie. I don't necessarily, and I feel like it fails to deliver that if you don't quite have the same like nostalgia for
the connection.
So not that it's a bad movie. It's still a really solid movie. Like, if we're talking about like letter grade averages, like a C is like an average movie. So this is definitely way above average. It's just, I don't think it delivers on the same impact if you don't have that real big personal connection to the movie like you do. I think you have some kind of personal connection to the movie, right? Like, you were talking about how this is an influential movie for you kind of deal.
Oh, I mean, it's nostalgic.
Nostalgic?
Yeah. I wouldn't say it necessarily like influenced my life.
Okay. That's fair. I just like, I don't know. I just don't think it delivers as much as one that might have a lot more nostalgia for it would get out of it. And I'm definitely not saying it's a bad movie whatsoever. It's definitely a movie everybody should watch. I just feel like there's more to be desired from it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
My closing thoughts on this, though, is I truly don't think that anybody else can write a film about a Midwesterner selling brake pads that is, one, as successful and, two, as entertaining as they provided. It's a Midwestern selling brake pads. That is not a good movie if you write that on paper. It sounds horrible, but it delivered.
Yeah. I feel like writing that as a tagline to sell it, that doesn't do it favors, but
it doesn't,
that's a great way to describe it.
Is that not what the whole movie
is
about?
That is what it is.
That is what it is. Yeah. I think it's definitely a solid movie. It's got a lot of great parts to it. I just think a couple things are just a little too disjointed about it.
Yeah.
And also, that's a personal grading, too. I'm not trying to be super objective about it. I don't normally try to be super objective of my gratings because I want it to be like an honest, like my point of view kind of on it. Because that's really what it is.
Yeah.
It's also like, it's not necessarily my humor a ton. So, you know, like it doesn't hit the mark perfectly, but it still definitely scratches the itch a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie to watch. Entertaining. This is now my go-to 100 times.
Well, holy shnikes, because this has been another episode of Theater Cleaners. We've been very happy to have been joined by Miss Kerrigan Sales to distract us and help keep us off track for the entirety of this episode. But no, it's been an absolute blast. And I mean, I'm sorry to you guys at home if we went too off track, but hopefully we keep some of it in there so you guys get to hear a little bit more about how we talk on the day to day. Either way, it's been another fun time. These two
hooligans, rascals, rugby players,
spazoids.
I was really glad you guys just hit me with all the adjectives, because yeah, I would say these two spazoids in the construction helmets have been fun to get to talk to for the last couple bits. But either way, we got to wrap this up. So thanks for tuning in. Join us next time. We're probably going to talk about something at some point.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'd say so.
Cool. Well, that's it.
And it ended with a whimper.